After being at sea for weeks, you experience a curious phenomenon called land sickness. When you finally step on land, the ground lurches beneath you. What was once solid is now soft. What was once familiar, foreign. I was only a child when my family took me to live at sea for 2 years, so my memories of that time are unpredictable and fractured. Things like dolphins and cockroaches, tiny waves glittering in the light, pointed and perfect as the tips of knives, extraordinary stained glass sunsets, the sun golden and perfectly round against a sanguine sky. Even now, when the sun sets red, I watch it with a sailor's delight. Being at sea gives you a different perspective. Around you, the ocean stretches for miles. There's an ecstasy in the endlessness. In a letter to Sigmund Freud, the French novelist Romain Rolland uses the term oceanic feeling to refer to a sensation of eternity, a feeling of being one with the external world as a whole. You feel so tiny and infinite all at once. It may seem strange to start an essay about AI, or artificial intelligence, with a feeling of profound smallness, given that AI is arguably one of the biggest issues of our time. As an AI ethicist, I wake up to a plethora of news articles every day proclaiming that AI is going to revolutionize the world around us, that it will bring us closer to the dream of perfect automation, freedom from work, efficiency at an unprecedented speed and scale. Simultaneously, fantasies of Terminator-like destruction abound, with critics bemoaning the existential risks posed by AI development and deployment. Take the prophesied emergence of artificial general intelligence, or a superintelligent form of AI that will not only match or supersede human intelligence, but will escape the bounds of human control. In the 1960s, the mathematician I.J. Goode was one of the primary proponents of this so-called intelligence explosion hypothesis. He also served as the consultant for Stanley Kubrick's 2001, A Space Odyssey, which depicted the AI pilot HAL 9000 going rogue and killing multiple crew members. But really, it's unsurprising that so many Anglophone and Western cultural touchstones about AI portray it as dominating humanity. After all, look at how we've treated the world around us, as a resource that exists to be used, consumed, and thrown away. The existential threat of AI might be an inescapable headline, but we rarely talk about how AI exacerbates another existential threat to humanity, the impending climate crisis. AI's ecological costs are immense. Take data centers, the lifeblood of AI. They require huge amounts of energy and water to function and are frequently built in water-scarce areas. In 2023, throngs of Uruguayans gathered to protest Google's plan to build a data center in the drought-stricken country, which would cause further regional water stress. In response, the sustainable AI movement aims to make AI as clean, green, and efficient as possible, while also harnessing AI's computational capacities for environmental gain. Big tech firms like Google, Microsoft, and Amazon have committed to significant carbon reduction and carbon capture programs, with Google aiming for net zero emissions by 2030. But is this enough? When I was a child, living on that boat for 2 years, I had few hobbies, and those I had needed to be adapted to the confined spaces we occupied. One of these hobbies, strangely enough, was hula hooping. Another, perhaps more logically, was reading. At sea for weeks on end, I read voraciously. Despite the prevalence of Hollywood-esque Terminator fantasies about AI, there are science fiction stories which grapple with the environmental degradation caused by tech development. Crucially, in these dystopian worlds, environmental justice cannot be separated from racial justice, gender justice, or disability justice. Both people and planet are treated like trash. Take the 2013 novel Waste Tide by Chen Qiufan, where the poor inhabitants of the fictitious Silicon Isle off the coast of China process dangerous e-waste for a pittance. The novel follows Mimi, a waste girl, after she is infected by a piece of contaminated e-waste. She's captured, tortured, and reincarnated as a vengeful, omnipotent cyborg, determined to wreak revenge upon the people who have treated those of Silicon Isle like the waste that they process. Or consider Larissa Lai's novel Saltfish Girl, which is partially set in a post-apocalyptic United States in 2024. Citizens live in walled-off cities, while the outside, unregulated zone is barely habitable. Shoe factories are populated by clones whose DNA has been spliced with that of fish, making them not quite human. They are consequently property, owned by the companies they slave away for, and their revolution is ruthlessly crushed by corporate overlords. These stories illuminate how our current approach to building AI is likely to lead us further down a dark path of environmental degradation and economic exploitation. So let's turn back the pages of my life to see how we can imagine different kinds of futures with AI through life at sea. I don't know if it was because I was a child and therefore life was innately smaller, or because life on a ship is small, but I can measure my time on board that ship in tiny, granular units. The square footage of a ship's cabin I shared with my brother, mother, and father, the narrow, winding corridors with ceilings so low that some of the adults on board permanently walked with their head tilted to the side. I shudder now to think of the state of their necks and upper backs. Even the flimsy, fluttery squares of toilet paper we had to ration to make sure that we didn't run out in the middle of the ocean. In fact, when I think of sustainability, I think of those half-translucent squares and of what it means to live in a finite world. Increasingly, companies and technologists laud AI's incredible speed and scale. Take OpenAI's ChatGPT and the other large language models, or LLMs, that have taken the world by storm. The immense computational capacity of these models bring new opportunities, but also new risks that the AI Now Institute calls pathologies of scale. From the ecological and financial costs, through to the political and social harms like disinformation, stereotypes, biases, and translation errors. In light of this, what would it mean for AI to be small? In the speculative design project Wriggling Through Muddy Waters, Michelle Lee Brown describes a biotech eel AI based on the relationship of the Basque people with eels. She describes a VR environment where an elder eel could teach students how to live reciprocally in the world around them. Brown's biotech eel, with its specific cultural and historical traditions and its focus on building good relations between the Basque people and the planet, demonstrates how AI doesn't have to be all-encompassing or universal in scope. Sometimes efficiency is found in smallness, not scale. At sea, my mother used to joke with the ship's crew that the lifeboats were blocking the view from her porthole. One year, on Christmas Day, we woke up and looked out the window, expecting to see the curved, dull sides of the lifeboats back at us. Instead, we saw a great, endless expanse of ocean, disturbed only by a single sheet of A4 paper flapping in the wind. The note said, in black block capitals, "Merry Christmas," from the deck crew. They had lowered the lifeboats so that for one day, my mother could enjoy the view. I think I remember this so fondly because, when at sea, there was so little we could control. Everything on board that ship was scheduled and predetermined. When you could use amenities like washing machines and dryers, the times when you could go to the ship's galley to eat, the food on offer. I quickly grew sick of UHT milk, powdered potatoes, tuna fish, tinned ravioli, bright red squash, and parboiled rice. I craved fruit and vegetables and fresh, whole milk. The regimented life on the boat contrasted with the unfettered, powerful might of the sea. Someone told me once that during a storm, the ship was tossed so violently that they feared for their lives. Technologists, particularly those obsessed with artificial general intelligence, often portray it as a dangerous and unstoppable tide charting a new course in human history. But out on the ocean, you find ways to coexist with each other. Maybe we can learn to live with AI in the same way. In 2021, the Indigenous Protocol and Artificial Intelligence Working Group met to discuss how AI could be informed by a rich range of Indigenous knowledge systems. Reflecting on the conference, the Kanaka Maoli technologist and academic Jason Edward Lewis wrote that Hawaiian participants talked about all the steps involved with crafting a fishing net, the layer upon layer of permission and appreciation and reciprocity required to properly work with those relations, protocols that could model how we might want to create our hardware and software systems from a foundation of ethical care. So what if we cared for our algorithmic tools the way that we care for our oceanic ones? Academics, artists, and technologists are working together to create AI prototypes that place people and planet first. Take the work of Jocelyn London, a computer scientist at the University of Cambridge and the founder of the project Climate in Colour. She explores the promise and limits of AI-powered sensing technologies in response to biodiversity crises. But currently, projects like these are just a drop in the deluge of AI research that sees technology as something entirely separate from the planet. We need a revolution in the way that we make and see AI-powered technologies. A sea change, if you'll indulge me. The wildness of the ocean stands in contradiction with the logic of AI systems, which are premised on prediction. AI sorts and categorizes with astounding efficiency. But what about the things that escape categorization? What about the color of the ocean? I've swum in the cool slate-gray seas of Aotearoa, New Zealand, and the icy waters of southern Chile. I've watched the sun melt into sea foam on the horizon of coastal North Carolina and sink like a glittering diamond into the warm turquoise waters of Fiji. Our current approach to AI and our attempts to make it more sustainable tries to quantify the unmeasurable. But the lessons I learned at sea, of smallness, of powerlessness, of the need for harmony and coexistence, of balance, can help us imagine different ways of designing and living with AI. Perhaps no algorithm can ever capture the full expanse of my oceanic feelings, but in the meantime, I imagine an algorithm crafted with the same love as a fishing net and used with the care of a flimsy piece of toilet paper while out at sea. Rather than creating AI for the planet, let us imagine AI from the planet, AI that is as much a part of the planet as you and me.